Welcome to the Album Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Andy, Don, and Dude.
I love you. I honestly love you.
It's the Album Nerds Podcast. I'm Dude. I got Andy and Don with me. We're ready to do some loving. Y'all ready? Andy.
I'm still kind of in like the like phase, maybe. I'm slowly warming up. You can keep working on me, buddy. We'll get there.
Gotcha. How about you, Don?
Yeah, I've just been, sitting around watching the tube. Nothing's on.
I hear you. You're pathetic.
Call me what you will.
Okay.
Well played.
Very well played. This is the Album Nerds Podcast. We love albums, the album format, and we especially love talking about albums. We got a great show for you today. We're going to each pick an album that we grew to love, and we'll talk about those. Don's going to ask us a deep question. We're going to give some shout-outs to albums and album-related items we're digging. Then we're going to spin that wheel of musical discovery to find out what we'll talk about on the next episode. But this week, it's all about growing to love.
That's what I'm talking about!
Well, sometimes when we first listen to an album, we don't appreciate it or connect with it. After repeated listens or with the passing of time, we might begin to find those albums meaningful and enjoyable. And today, each of us will present an album we grew to love.
Yeah, it sometimes really can take a lot of time. You might just make a snap decision based on genre or the, you know, maybe a friend of yours is a real ding-dong and they like something, so you assume it sucks. You just never know. You never know.
So, I feel like I'm the ding-dong
in that story.
But giving albums a second chance, third chance, fourth chance can be a really good thing. You know, what were you guys thinking about? What were some of the other albums that came to mind that ended up not being your main pick, but what was close?
Yeah, a record that came to mind for me initially was a record that I listened to way too early in my life, Captain Beefheart. He has this kind of infamous record called Trap Mask Replica, which is kind of like an experimental folk rock record. I listened to it in my early 20s, kind of blew my mind. I didn't really know what I was getting into. Mm-hmm. But after a couple decades, I come back to appreciate that record a fair amount. The other one I thought of that I did not expect to like at all was from a pop star. You guys remember the song Call Me Maybe, maybe about 10 years ago.
Oh, God.
I just met you.
It was everywhere.
This
yes.
is crazy.
It was the song of the summer.
Yeah, I kind of hated that song, but she put out a record right after that I ended up really coming to love called Emotion Side B. It was like remixes from that record. That was really enjoyable, and it kind of got me into being a little more open-minded about pop music in general. You know?
Cool.
So, yeah, it's good not to close off your mind too much. What was your listening experience, Don?
Unfortunately, I mean, we've done so many records on this podcast that I could fit into this category.
Me too. Yeah.
You know, so for example, we just did Born in the USA a little while ago. And I mean, a lot of that like kind of mainstream 80s rock and pop, I had no interest in it, you know, until my adult life when I think I stopped being such a
douche,
such a jerk, I guess. Yeah, douche is probably the better word. And so, yeah, so I mean, I had so much fun listening to Born in the USA, you know, for that episode. Another one I thought of was R.A.M. Monster, you know, so you guys covered that, you know, before I was on the podcast, but that was at the time, you know, that is not what I wanted from the new R.E.M. album. And it took me, you know, quite a while to get it.
I did want that, which is funny. I was ready for them to hurt. They could keep hurting, but I needed them to hurt a little more loudly. So I enjoyed it.
Hurt with more guitars.
Yeah, pretty much. For me, Don, I'm probably worse than you in my younger years, in my late teens and stuff. If I had found my identity through Pearl Jam and Nirvana and Seattle and whatever, so anything that was adjacent, I immediately just thought was sellout stuff, like Candlebox, self-titled album. Really good album. They have their own style, a little bluesy. A couple years later, I listened to it. I'm like, this is great. What was my problem? And that's, I think, something, maybe that's part of youth. I don't know if all music fans are like that, but I regret being so closed off. Next up was Pearl Jam, No Code. We've talked enough about Pearl Jam, I think, on the show, so that was not a pick. But at the time, I was just disappointed that it didn't sound Pearl Jam-y enough. It came out after Vitalogy, and they were experimenting, and I'm like, no, don't grow, don't evolve. But over time, I mean, there are some of their best songs on that album, and it really did kind of shape what their sound became over time. So like it or not, No Code was the beginning, but it's a really good record, and I applaud them for not trying to sound the same over and over again. So, all right. So enough about all those. Let's get into our picks.
You choose me?
All right, my Gruta Love selection is from the experimental hip-hop trio by the name of Death Grips, and their 2012 release, The Money Store. So Death Grips from Sacramento, California, comprised of Zach Hill on drums, Andy Moore on keyboards, and MC Ride on vocals. This was their debut studio album. They had put out a mixtape that I was familiar with called Ex-Military the year before. Let's hear a little bit of the opening cut. This is Get Got.
But did you know? Get got blood rushed in my head. They hot like popping off the fast rapping.
Yes. Highly edited rap in there from MC Ride. If you were following music in 2012, this record made quite a splash on the musical landscape. A lot of rave reviews. I was a big fan, or still a fairly big fan, of The Needle Drop, who just was so excited by this record. And I, as a fan of him, was like, oh, I should love this record.
Oh, Anthony Fantano, yeah.
Anthony Fantano, YouTube fame album reviewer. Yeah, I really loved their debut record, which I thought was really exciting and kind of had a real raw aggression to it. Kind of reminded me a little bit of Rage Against the Machine. And this record kind of made a sharp left-hand turn from there and really leaned in some more of the electronic aspects and moved away from like this sample-heavy sound they had, but more of like a raw drum sound. This record sounds so composed and effectified. It's a little hard to tie it back to the instruments, which I didn't love at the time. But I think, you know, as I've listened to it more and kind of had some distance from it and kind of like saw how it affected the musical landscape after a year or two, I really did start to appreciate the kind of the interesting sounds they came up with. And, the you know, this record is about like loops and just kind of playing with effects within those loops to create some really interesting...
Loop it and swoop it.
Loop it and swoop it. That's right.
Is that like how you tie your shoes?
Uh-huh. I wondered if anyone would pick up on that.
Well, I don't think this is a perfect record by any means, but I do think it does kind of stand out among of the releases from 2012, and I do hold it among my favorites of the discography. My clickbait headline for this album is, The Money Store refuses album nerd's return request, offers hipster credit instead.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think I was drawn to listening to it when it first came out because of the reviews and stuff as well. It was not what I expected, and I walked away. Never came back until this week.
So I forced you to.
I wonder if it's kind of like the Captain Beefheart album, where you recognize that it's interesting and important, but maybe maybe it's not fun to listen to.
Right.
Right. It's a little too challenging, perhaps. Yeah. But I mean, as long as you can recognize that kernel of something there, I guess, and maybe bookmark it for later and come back when you're in a better place.
Yep.
Let's hear another cut from a little bit later in the record. This is I've Seen Footage.
That sounds more like a late 70s rap, you know, beat. Not the delivery. Vocal delivery, no, but...
I've Seen Footage reflects on the overwhelming exposure to disturbing images and videos in modern society, such as police brutality and violence. The refrain, if there is a refrain in there, I've seen footage, I stay noided. At first, I'm like, what, noided? I was thinking of that. Remember Domino's Pizza, the noid?
Avoid the noid.
Avoid the noid. He ruins pizza. Yes.
But I guess that comes from the word paranoid, right? Yeah, so it's basically a feeling of paranoia and anxiety, which is kind of, I guess, apparently, a recurring theme in their work. So my clickbait headline for The Money Store is, don't be noited. The Money Store sets the stage for a post-hip-hop world. But so I've been reading about like post-rock, you know, which is sort of this avant-garde stuff that throws away rock conventions. And it seems like this album kind of does that with hip-hop, you know? So, I mean, you're losing the flow and the, you know, the smoothness of of rap, and you know, you're getting rid of the sampling, and but it's still to me, it's still hip hop, or it has kind of hip hop sensibilities.
I think the juxtaposition of the keyboard stuff and the vocal flow, it's at odds with each other a lot, which mm-hmm. I think is probably part of the vibe they're trying mm-hmm. to make. But yeah. for me, it's distracting, and it's hard to pay attention right. to either thing when they're just mm-hmm. constantly interfering with each other.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this music is intentionally disconcerting. mm-hmm. Kind of like that, like the Philip Glass we listened right, to, you know, right. similar.
Yeah, I think it's supposed to make you feel a little on edge, maybe a little noided out.
Right, which makes it not appropriate for every occasion.
Not a good dinner party selection, perhaps.
Right. Or lovemaking.
Yeah. Depends on how you do it.
Yeah, you know, I found my way to, you know, enjoy the record. It's really a sonic experience. So if you're listening to it on headphones or you're playing it loud in the car, it works. And it's, I don't know, it kind of takes you to a mental place that I think ordinary pop music doesn't. So yeah, definitely a cool experience. By the way, there's a Beatles reference in that Double Helix song.
Really?
You know, he says Blue Jay Way, you know, which is a song from Magical Mystery Tour. And the refrain in that is, you know, don't be long, please don't be long. And so he says Blue Jay Way, don't be long.
Interesting. Yeah, nice. Not expected that.
A little Easter egg.
Nice. All right, let's play the final cut from the record. This is Hacker.
I feel like I'm at a dance club in London, 1982, with that particular keyboard work there.
Yeah, you feeling the vibes?
Yeah, but I'm not listening to the words, right? So it's like one or the other. That was my problem here.
Yeah,
gotcha. Yeah, so these lyrics are around cyber warfare, subversion, and rebellion. At least that's what I read. And the title Hacker kind of indicates computers. So I tend to right. believe that. You know, it's chaotic and abrasive, distorted, and it's sort of like every other song on the record. Like, I just felt beat over the head with the same approach on every song. My clickbait headline, Death Grips Sonic Sledgehammer that bludgeons hip-hop norms and leaves your eardrums begging for mercy, which is kind of what I felt.
Perfect.
At, you know, which is the point, I think, but that's hard to learn to love something that wants you to hate it.
Actively yeah. bludgeoning you?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know?
No, yeah. I definitely understand that. Yeah, definitely. It's abrasive, and like I said, I think that's kind of the point.
Yeah, so what would you tell someone who, you know, to listeners right now that may need to learn to love this album, what keys should they be paying attention to get there as a first-time listener?
Check it out. It's so good. It's so...
Wow. Beautiful.
I think the first listen, you kind of just have to like let it wash over you and not really try to dissect it too much. I think I was looking for like a deeper meaning from this record, like to change my life, and I didn't do that. And I think that was unreasonable for me to expect that.
Fair enough.
So I think just kind of like appreciating it for what it is as a whole. And I think if you're not familiar with your sound, it's going to sound like just a lot of noise and kind of a mess. So allowing you to get a little bit more comfortable with yourself and letting that seep in a little bit, I think will lead to some more interesting listens in the future.
I should have asked for advice before we started our research.
Could answer that last week.
Yeah.
You can't go into a record with the expectation that it's going to change your life, because
no.
That's kind of how reviews like ruin music to some degree.
It's true.
That's why reviews that are mixed are usually the best albums.
Yeah, a little more level-headed. All right, so that is The Money Store by Death Grips.
Before we get to our next album pick, let's hear from our friend over at the Pick-A-Disc podcast.
Do you like music? Do you like podcasts? Chances are you like music podcasts. Take this one, for example, Pick-A-Disc, where every fortnight a guest comes on to talk about an album for whatever reason they want to. Sometimes I like it, sometimes perhaps even something else other than just like it. You just listen to the podcast and find out. We talk about the album, we talk about the songs, we talk about the artists, we talk about tangent things that are slightly related, and sometimes we deviate off tangents. But don't worry, we'll always bring it back in the end. But you can find us on all your social medias and all the podcast apps for searching for Pick-A-Disc. You can also find us on the part of the Weedy Podcast Network artwork under linktree.com/WeDigPodcast. And until then, happy listening to all those discs that you are picking. Goodbye.
Yeah, so go check out Pick a Disc.
So my choice for an album I grew to love is from The. The album's called Mind Bomb, released in 1989. It's the third studio album by the English post-punk band, which is mainly just Matt Johnson, a singer-songwriter, born in London in 1961. But for this album, he actually recruited a band with the intention of, you know, going out on tour. So he picked Johnny Marr, you know, from the Smiths.
That's a good pick.
Yeah, yeah. Guitarist, bassist James Eller, who had played with Julian Cope, and drummer David Palmer, who was in that group ABC, and then a bunch of other studio musicians. Here's the second cut on the album. This is Armageddon Days Are Here Again.
Picture a talking candle and some some animated teacups singing this song.
Right. It's hard to picture them singing about, you know, war and religion and, you know, the apocalypse.
Yeah, was that song from Aladdin?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Come on.
Well, it actually, so it explores themes of war, religion, and the apocalyptic mindset that, you know, has kind of gripped humanity throughout history. You know, it critiques the way religious and political powers manipulate people through fear and through the impending doom of Armageddon. And, you know, despite that heavy theme, you know, as you heard, it's kind of presented in an absurd way. You know, at the beginning, he's like, are you ready, Jesus? Buddha? You know?
Yeah.
So.
Big Top Circus or something.
Yeah. It's fun. So I guess I was in ninth grade, you know, so I was what, like 14 years old or something.
Oh, this would be a lot.
Yeah. So I had heard of the, I think in my Columbia Record Club, you know, mailer, I'd see that in the Modern Rock. And so I borrowed it from somebody. And the first two songs are kind of a lot to take in. So I don't think I made it through, you know, this cut. You know, it's just a bit much for me. But, you know, with time, at some point I revisited it and, you know, kind of fell in love with this album and, you know, the in general. So my clickbait headline for this record is The detonates a heavy-handed but mostly effective existential mind bomb. So, like, musically, it's a departure from the previous album, Infected, which some people claim is, you know, like his masterpiece. I'm not as big of a fan of that record. It's just very gaudy and of the 80s, I think. I think the sounds on this album are kind of more universal. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of half, like, kind of political, religious songs. So you've got Armageddon Days Are Here Again, The Violence of Truth, The Beaten Generation. And then the other half is more personal songs. There's a duet with Sinead O'Connor, Kingdom of Rain. Great song, August and September. But yeah, it's a lot. And I mean, I think it's probably a bit uneven. But overall, I think it's a solid record. Not subtle at all, I would say.
No, like kind of insultingly not subtle.
Yeah.
It just felt very obvious. And not, yes. I don't know. Maybe that was the idea, to be plain spoken, but have my mind blown. But I guess I'd rather it be a little less Broadway. Ask. Mm-hmm.
You know, lyrically, I kind of, it reminds me of, you know, I hate to do it, but it reminds me of Roger Waters, who I think, you know, particularly when he went into his solo work, he stopped being, I mean, any subtlety he had, he just threw out and just was, you know.
I don't know. It didn't really bother me. I mean, I do agree that messages were obvious and maybe a little too so, but I felt like he really had some points he wanted to get across here, and I thought he did it in a fairly interesting way, to be honest. Especially the music side of things. Maybe the lyrics aren't quite as interesting.
Well, let's hear another cut. This is The Beaten Generation. The Beaten
Generation. Open your eyes. Yeah. Again, open your eyes, open your imagination. It just continued to feel like cartoon characters to me.
But it's like a throwback to like those kind of 60s.
Yes.
Protesty songs.
I know. It just, I don't know. It just seemed insincere. Although I like the B10 generation, EN in parentheses, I do appreciate like there is some depth here, right? This is critiquing disillusionment and materialism in contemporary society, but drawing parallels to the Beat generation of the 1950s, the Beat poets, your Kerouacs, etc. So that spirit of rebellion is cool, but that just doesn't sound very rebellious to me. My clickbait headline is the wild sermon on sin, war, and love. Come for the absurdity, stay for the apocalypse.
That's good.
Thank you. Because it's like the idea is great. I love just taking it head on, but sometimes it just was the first two tracks in particular so absurd and silly sounding that I don't know. It just another one I'm going to have to learn to love. I had not listened to this before, although I did see the live with you, Don, at one point. So I'm sure I heard a couple of these tracks, but it just felt like he was trying too hard and Johnny Marr couldn't save him.
Yeah, you know, the Marr-ness on this record wasn't quite as in my face as I thought it might be.
Yeah, I think, you know, after the Smiths, or even towards the end of the Smiths, Johnny Marr kind of branched out, was kind of moving away from that like jangly, rhythmic, you know, playing. And he starts to get more kind of like atmospheric and background. Mm-hmm. So you have to like really listen on some of these tracks. And he's doing some interesting things with more like soundscapes and stuff with the guitar. So there's a lot of that on the record. I'm not sure that there's a lot of virtuosity on this.
I thought there were a lot of interesting production choices, honestly, especially on this first handful of tracks that made it feel kind of cinematic, like you're saying, Don. Mm-hmm. I appreciated that. I don't know, maybe it was a little too highbrow for dude over there, but
it felt too lowbrow, honestly.
Yeah, I know, that's what you're saying.
Right, well, let's hear another cut. This is The Violence of Truth.
What is evil? What is love? What
to me, this kind of sounds like, if I was a teenager, this would probably like really excite me, because it's kind of like at that level, I guess, of like, what are these things in the world, you know, just like discovering these for the first time.
That track just sounds like an uncool version of NXS.
Really? No, I like that beat, honestly. Oh,
I do too, but it sounds like an NXS song.
Yeah. It's cool. There's a cool Johnny Marr part where he's like, wah, 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 wah. Sorry.
All right. My clickbait headline for Mind Bomb is the ballistics report reveals weighty explosives, but only partial detonation. For me, I liked the beginning of the record a lot. I really found that pretty captivating, those first three tracks especially, which is a good chunk of the runtime. Like I said, it felt cinematic. I didn't really know what was going to happen next. It felt like there were a lot of interesting production choices going on. The song structures were kind of unique. You know, the voices and stuff, maybe a little cheesy, but whatever, I'm on for that. It just kind of lost me as it really changed up the pacing, as, like on the second half of the record, starting with that duet, which I thought was a good song with Shane O'Connor. But it never really got back to that interesting kind of like avant-garde post-rock punk sound that I appreciated on the later half of the record. Gravitate to me is the closest to that, but I really felt like that song was way too long and just kind of further off the rails. I don't know. Overall, I guess I was pretty positive on this, but I didn't really know what to expect. So I guess that helps.
You didn't expect it to change your world?
No, I wasn't expecting that, but it did open my mind to maybe some different sounds that I wasn't expecting from the.
I think I expected it to be more Cure-ish or Depeche Mode-ish, or, you know, I expected it to be a little more of that world instead of being kind of off in its own space. So
yeah, and I think that's what I was thinking back in, you know, back when I was 14.
Well, here I am, an old man apparently with the mentality of 14-year-old Don. Perfect.
Sounds about right.
All right, well, so the album was Mind Bomb from the.
Excuse me, I'd like to ask you a few questions.
Well, time for deep questions by Don. Right, and just like Matt Johnson and what's his name, MC Ride, you know, we're gonna go deep. So, right, we're talking about records that we've grown to love. What else have you grown to love?
Well, my tastes in food have changed a lot since I was a young a young person, which surprised me. There's a lot of things I just detested growing up, like tomatoes.
What?
Mushrooms. Anything like squishy, I really hated. Now I like eat those all the time.
So it's like a texture thing?
Yeah, texture thing, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. I've really taken a liking to bitter foods, which I never really was into, I think. I don't know. Like, your taste buds must just evolve over time, or maybe different ones come into season or something. I feel like I'm a totally different person in terms of my diet than I used to be.
I think it depends on how hungry you are. When I was a kid, I'd eat anything, but liver was off. I didn't like that. But anything else, any vegetable, whatever, I was in.
Now you're more picky?
Nope.
Maybe that's just you.
Just as hungry.
The other thing I'll mention too, my taste in music has changed a lot. Genres that I totally would have sworn off as a 20-year-old, like electronic music or country music, I appreciate and even, I would even say, love in some cases. So, yeah, it's good to grow up.
I think that's probably the same for all three of us in terms of the music stuff. Like, I've definitely opened my eyes and my imagination. For me, one thing I've learned to love is Don.
A long process.
Yeah.
Still a work in progress.
Decades in the making. No, honestly, like, I love football, NFL in particular, and have for years, fantasy football freak, etc. But there was a time when I did not like football when I was a little kid. We didn't have cable. We only had a few channels. And during the holidays, there'd be holiday specials and whatever. But those always coincided with bowl games. And my parents were big college football fans. And they would scream and yell for 2.5-3 hours while I didn't get to watch whatever movie of the week was on. We only had one TV in the house, and I just grew to hate it. And I started rooting against the team they were rooting for, because if they were going to yell anyway, I might as well get some pleasure from their pain.
Wow.
But then over the years, I came to really love NFL football kind of on my own.
Yeah, now you can just DVR whatever you're missing on the other channels.
Yeah, exactly.
Another sports one for me, soccer, or what they call football. You know, it's not something I ever, probably because my dad wasn't into it. You know, I never really watched soccer as a kid or anything. But at some point, I think I got sucked into the World Cup and just how important it seemed to all these nations and everybody there. And just, everybody, I mean, just so intense. Yeah. And then, I mean, there's no commercials because the clock doesn't stop. It's just awesome, you know? So, I mean, 45 minutes straight of no commercials.
Football is life!
Did you watch the football in the Olympics, Don? Or?
Yes, I did. You know, particularly the women's team. Yeah.
I watched no Olympics except for, I saw a clip on YouTube of the breakdancing championship.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking of you watching that, actually.
Canada.
That was pretty dope.
Canada took the gold.
Yeah, Canada.
Well, what have you grown to love? Let us know. Hit us on Instagram and Facebook, or leave a comment on our website, albumnerds.com.
Do you guys have the time to listen to me whine? That's what I'm about to do.
What about, exactly?
About how I missed out on Green Day back in 1994. All right, so I picked Dookie by Green Day. Third studio album, first on a major label, released February 1st, 1994, produced by Rob Cavello and Green Day. It was certified diamond by the RIAA, sold over 20 million copies, and is ranked among the greatest albums of the 90s. And I hated it.
You thought it was Dookie?
I did. Let's jump into a little bit of Basket Case. Even though I hated the record, I always secretly loved this song whenever it would come on. So there was an exception.
Not escape the song. No,
yeah. So it's all about anxiety and feeling like you're losing your mind. Billy Joe wrote it during a time when he was struggling with panic attacks. Lyrics are raw and honest, which I think is true for the whole album. There's that gradual buildup, the drums that are layered with the harmonies, and it kind of amplifies that sense of paranoia. And then that nice bass riff and the instrumental interlude, but just those, I don't know, they are just not really like punk. They're too musically talented on their instruments compared to the Sex Pistols and things of that nature. More like the Clash, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair.
There's a hint of his bisexuality in there too.
Yep.
Because the whore he goes to is a he, I think.
I think, you know, and that was pretty gutsy at the time too, to be just becoming introduced to the world with your band and being open about that was, yeah, it was weird. I remember it, but kind of remember shrugging it off like, okay.
Yeah.
I remember many of my friends questioning that lyric at the time, too.
It's a very punk rock thing to do.
It is.
So my clickbait headline to describe the album, Green Day's punk masterpiece that perfectly captures the chaos and joy of your 20s. Brash music meets poetic reflections on growing up. I came to give them a more of a chance after Blink-182 showed what really shitty pop punk is.
And how deep it could go in the shitty pop punk hole.
I realized that, you know, the album in 2000, Warning, did some folk music stuff. Like, I just thought that they were, I was like, these guys are musicians trying to grow. And that's when I started kind of checking them out and eventually worked my way back to Dookie.
It all comes back to Dookie eventually.
It does. All right, so why don't we jump into another track? This one is Longview. Bite my lip and close my eyes.
Not too subtle there. Yeah, it's hard to really describe how much of an impact this record had on my high school growing up. It was just saturated everything for like a 6-month period. But for me, yeah, this record is pretty enjoyable. My clickbait headline for Dookie is Green Day turns my high school journal into a Grammy.
You're welcome. You're like, I could have done that. Andy did a lot of lip biting in high school.
Yes, my lip was very sore. I think that was kind of part of the appeal of this. At the time, I viewed this music as kind of being, you know, very immature and kind of made by like young people for young people about young people topics, you know, it felt like it was really about teenagers, and the things I was going through were on the record and very, you know, very clearly talked about. But coming back to it now, as in my 40s, I'm like, man, these songs are actually really well constructed.
Yes.
These are like really well produced, and it's pretty clean for a punk rock record. And the whole thing, even like Longview, like they bring that drum beat in on the previous track.
From
like,
Chump? Yeah. It's awesome.
It's like, that's kind of cool. I like that.
Yeah, they're actual musicians, and I didn't give them the credit they deserved in that at the time.
Exactly. Yeah. I didn't really appreciate the complexities or how. This music is not complicated music by any means, but it's very well put together. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was pretty fun listening, coming back to this. A little nostalgic for me, but I think it holds up pretty well.
All right, so why don't we check out another track? This one is called She.
So that one's written by Billy Joe Armstrong, supposedly inspired by a former girlfriend who introduced him to a feminist poem with that same title, you know, which kind of deals with the plight of a woman and having to meet certain, you know, societal expectations. Yeah, so this relationship and its end kind of influenced this song, as well as Sassafras Roots. Is that how you say it? Sassafras? Mm-hmm. And Chump. Yeah, I guess what I like about the album, you know, it's melodic. Actually, somebody, I saw a quote from a critic that said it's sensitive without being soft, which I think is a good way to put it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. My clickbait headline is Green Day pushes grunge aside, bringing pop punk to the 90s. Yeah, so I think, you know, I was probably dismissive of it at the time because, you know, it was like, hey, punk rock happened in the 70s.
Right,
you know, who do these guys think they are?
That was part of my thing, too. Like, who needs to bring that back?
But it is kind of a different thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've already talked about just, you know, how well written the songs are. I mean, they're hooky. There's a melody to almost all of the songs.
They're more suburban than urban, which I think original punk was more urban.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. But it's also, it doesn't come across as whiny, you know, like it's like, oh, my dad wants me to mow the lawn or something. I was going back, I think I was surprised at how good and interesting the lyrics are. They're really good at capturing the, you know, the anxiety of youth and the disillusionment. But yeah, as Andy said, the production is so clean, but it's not overly like embellished. You know, there's not a lot of overdubbing. It's mostly just three instruments throughout. It's great. I mean, it's a really well produced album. Yeah, good stuff. It's not Dookie.
No, it's not. So I learned to love this so much that I'm going to nominate it for the Album Nerds Hall of Fame. Okay, so I mean, we talked a lot about the album and the musicianship, but, you know, this album is a perfect blend of punk sensibilities, catchy hooks, infectious choruses and melodies, and it's heartfelt and relatable with the lyrics that address the pains of growing up. And it never loses the playful edge, even though it's meaningful and poetic and the lyrics are well thought out and communicative. And we can't forget tracks like When I Come Around, Welcome to Paradise, and in true 90s CD era fashion, we've got a hidden track called All By Myself, performed by Trey Cool. But ultimately, what makes it so great is it captures a time of uncertainty in your early 20s, but it reflects on how this can also be some of the best times in your life when there's nothing better to do than hang out with your friends. I just think it is a perfect snapshot of 1994. And at the time, it distracting from grunge pissed me off, but now I see it for what it is. And I think it is a great album that deserves to be in our Hall of Fame. What do you guys think?
It's a good question, Mr. Dude. I'm not sure. I do like the record. It's a Hall of Fame worthy.
It certainly changed music.
It paved the way for The Offspring and
Blink-182. All right. You know what? I think I will say yes.
What?
I think I'll say yes. I'm opened. I've grown to that level. I guess this record does what it does pretty well. I'm not sure it could be much better. And it was pretty important at the time. So, all right. Yes for me.
Yeah. And I'm, you know, I think in the same place as Dude. You know, I've just grown to appreciate it, you know, for what it is. I was actually really trying hard to find things to criticize about it. And I didn't really come up with much
either.
So yes.
All right. An easy one. So that was Green Day, Dookie.
You just like saying that, don't you?
Yes, I do.
It's like shit, caca, poo-poo,
Dookie. Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
All right, so we spent the week, you know, listening to things that we grew to love. What else have you been digging?
All right, I got a couple things here in my briefs.
No. Oh my God.
Your jockeys.
It's worse and worse. Are there any Dookie in there?
Hopefully not.
What are you, skid marks?
Oh,
all right. God. First up for me, we got it from that era, actually. The Smashing Pumpkins have a new record out. It's called Agorhi Mori Me, I believe is how you'd say it. It's their 13th studio album. I'm impressed by this so far. It's got more of like a prog rock sound to it. Definitely a little more of an edge than they have in some of their later work. Let's hear a little bit of the opening single here.
It sounds a little more pumpkin-y. I think they have some of the original members back. Mm. But Billy doesn't test his voice the way he used to.
Yeah, he's aged. He's aged, but he's still got that angst in there, which I appreciate. And last one for me here is from show Mainstay, King Gizzard and Lizard Wizard. They have a new record out. It's called Flight B-741, whatever that means. it's a pretty fun record, though.
It's Australian for beer. Oh, wait, that's Foster's. Sorry.
This is their, believe it or not, 26th studio album. It kind of sounds like some of their earlier work, and that it's more of like a like boogie-woogie sort of like rock sound and pretty high energy, pretty fun listen, but also has like some dark messaging, which is just kind of seems to be a part of what they're doing lately. This is the opening single, Les Risques.
Kind of a Zappa.
Very Zappa, right?
Vibe to me.
Mm-hmm. What you been digging on, Dan?
Well, I wanted to kind of go back to the grew to love idea. One album, actually, it's true for pretty much every Duran Duran album made since like 1988. they often disappoint me at first, and then I grow to love them. So one album like that is Red Carpet Massacre. It was released in 2007. It was their second album, you know, after they had reunited with the original lineup. But then Andy Taylor left again. They ended up working with like Timbaland and Nate Donja Hills and Justin Timberlake, and it's a very modern dance vibe, elements of hip hop, and it wasn't really what I wanted to hear.
Seems like it would work better than when Chris Cornell partnered with Timbaland, which was even more of a jarring mix, you know?
Yeah. But I ended up, you know, I grew to love the album, and the album as a whole, you know, I think really works. But there's a track called Skin Divers.
Oh, they're going underwater. I thought Skin Divers might be about like plastic surgery and the Hollywood thing. And
It might too. I don't know, because they're that theme is you know, it throughout that album. Another thing I've been listening to lately, I actually heard them on the Broken Record podcast called Heavy Makeup. It's actually Edie Brickell with two trumpeters or brass players, CJ. Kamariari, and Trevor Hagen. So they have this is their second album. It's called Here It Comes. This is the title track. So it, you know, it's kind of has some jazzy elements, but it tends to be over sort of like an electronic or, you know, kind of synthy beat and backdrop.
Who'd I know that vocalist from, Don? Why does that sound familiar?
Edie Brickell. Yeah.
And the New Bohemians.
Right. I'm not aware of too many things. You know what I know, you know what I mean.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
How about you, dude?
So, back to Charlie Crockett. This is his second album this year.
Charlie Crockett.
He is the king of the music frontier.
Yeah.
This one is called Visions of Dallas. It's kind of part two of the $10 Cowboy, apparently, series. Let's listen to a little bit of Visions of Dallas.
I was having visions of Dallas as I passed.
You know, it's just kind of, I guess, classic Charlie Crockett. He's only been around a few years, but he's put out a ton of albums. And I just enjoy it, the sound of his voice, and his lyrics are good. And just a good listen.
Yeah. It's a cool guy.
Yeah, he can kind of do no wrong at this point for me. And then typically I like to pick an album out of my vinyl collection. I picked this up a little while back. It's a reissue. The copy I had was a freaking mess. It's by Kiss. The album is Destroyer. And let's listen to a little Detroit Rock City. Rock City, get up, everybody's gonna move their feet. Now, Destroyer is one of those where I kind of had to learn to love. It was their first studio album after they hit it big, so they had three studio albums before that were much rawer and less produced, and Bob Ezrin did the production on this, as he did on Songs from the Elder. This one took me a little longer to get to love, but the cover is epic, so
nice.
It's beautiful.
Yep, they were pretty good at the visuals.
And the music?
And the music?
Well, you know, there's just some moments on it, like... Great Expectations, where Gene takes it, sounds like a Disney song. We have great expectations. It's like, yeah. It's just like, what the hell? And then, of course, the big song on the album is Beth.
That's what the was drawing on.
Yes. And they were inspired. He was inspired by Gene Simmons.
Aren't we all?
All right, well, what are you digging? Let us know. Join us on the socials, Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. Also on our website, albumnerds.com.
It will be a discovery of extraordinary value.
Well, it's about that time on the program when I'm reminded of the great American martial artist, actor, and philosophizer.
Please say Chuck Norris.
They were good friends. Bruce Lee.
Okay, I'll take that one. Yeah, it's probably better.
Mr. Lee said, "Love is like a friendship caught on fire. In the beginning, a flame, very pretty, often hot and fierce, but still only light and flickering. As love grows older, our hearts mature, and love becomes as coals, deep burning and unquenchable."
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Chuck couldn't have pulled that one off.
Yeah. All right. With that in mind, let's bring out my friend and yours, Wadbot, and see what we'll be talking about on next week's episode.
As album nerds, you spend a lot of time listening to all sorts of music and artists. Next time, you will be exploring lesser-known hidden gems, albums that may not be well-known, but definitely worth a listen.
Hidden gems.
All right, so I guess stuff that maybe a little off the beaten path, couldn't even be well-known artists, but just albums that sort of fell between the cracks.
Like Gem and the Holograms?
I hope so.
All right, what are your favorite hidden gems? What else are you listening to? Leave a comment on our website or email us at podcast@albumnerds.com. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at Album Nerds. Also, please subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app. And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so via PayPal at albumnerds.com/support.
Thank you once again for joining us here on the Album Nerds podcast. We'll catch you next time with some family jewels. Oh, I mean hidden gems.
Yeah, keep those hidden, please. All right, thanks for listening, everybody. Catch you next week.
When I come around.
What does it sound like? I'm holding my nostrils.
Man needs a Kleenex.
for multiple reasons.
Oh, no. Yeah, right.